Welcome to Late Night Poetry Jam on KKRN Community Radio. I am Pamela Spoto, poet and host.
In my heart, in my brain, on my tongue, behind my teeth. Behind my eyes, on my tongue, under my skin, in my heart. In my veins, under my skin, behind my teeth, on my tongue, on my tongue, on my tongue.
We are broadcasting from KKRN Community Radio in Round Mountain. We will host a bi-monthly poetry show the last Saturday of the month at 10 p.m. So here we go, Late Night Poetry Jam. I'd like to welcome John Heiser to our Late Night Poetry Jam. So hello, John.
Hello, how are you doing, everybody?
And I'm doing well, and Doug Bennett is in the studio. He's our producer and engineer, and he's waving. I have his mic, so he can't talk to us, but that's okay. So what the plan is here is John and I are going to talk for a little while, and then he's going to play some music, and we're going to talk some more, and we're going to play some music. And, you know, in terms of poetry, often poetry and lyrics are very interchangeable. And I like putting some of my poems to music as well. I mean, so I'm saying this because this is called Late Night Poetry Jam. And often we have music and musicians here as well. So I think that that is a really good thing. So what I want to say about John is that he is a musician, a student, a songwriter, a philosopher of sorts. Would you agree that you're a philosopher of sorts?
Oh, yeah.
And didn't you just tell me you're starting to write your life story?
Yeah, I just started writing my worldview and basically my story of my life and why I came to my worldview now. And I've got many years of experience to tell everybody, so I'm trying to write a book on that, yeah.
Okay, good, and that's what I mean, kind of a philosopher of sorts. And I have to say too that you have been in three of my classes, and you're a wonderful student. And I've heard your worldview. Part of your worldview in terms of your writing.
And, well, let me interject one thing. Pamela yes. taught me how to read and write. So.
Well, okay. I think you had a lot of that down before you came into class. So I want to talk a little bit about your life because I always find out poets and creative artists and musicians, their lives are really fascinating, how they started creating, where they were, you know, what that looked like, how one does the writing process. So you are now obviously living in Reading, and I think when we had talked before, you said you moved here in 2004, and then before that, you were in Oregon and Washington for a few years, but you were born in the L.A. area, and you were born in Santa Monica, I believe, or around that area.
Yeah, in Santa Monica.
And as a child, because I thought, well, did you just decide one day that you were a musician, and you said that you really liked music, and you were playing in, you were singing in choir, you were in singing groups, and then you started taking guitar lessons. So can you tell us a little bit more about that time? I mean, were you like 7 or 8 years old and you started singing?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I had some friends that really liked to sing, and we basically were writing songs without guitars or anything because we didn't know how to play music. So we would just get the... You know, we'd make up lyrics and we'd sing the songs together and we'd try to, you know, do harmony and stuff like that when we were like 8 or 9. And from there, I wanted to play guitar, so I took a few lessons, but basically I've taught myself and learned from other people that I played with, you know, and songwriting has been a lot of my life, I'd say 90 or 80% of it at least, so...
And I was wondering, because as a poet, I'm in a poetry group, and so for a few years I'll be in a poetry group, and then I won't be in a poetry group, and then I might be in a poetry group for another 5 years, and it's where 5 or 6 of us get together, we read poetry, we talk about how we might publish our poetry. So when you were 7 or 8 years old with your friends, I mean, did you like hang out in your bedroom and just kind of start writing lyrics or ideas down and then kind of tossing them back and forth? I mean, how did that work?
Yeah, basically. I mean, we would just basically sing and then we'd make up lyrics and we'd remember the lyrics in our head and sometimes we'd write them down. But basically, we would just sing and remember the lyrics and pretty much it. And somebody's mother liked us, so we kind of that kind of jacked us. So we then I decided I wanted a guitar, so I got a guitar for my birthday when I was 12, and I started taking lessons a little bit, and things happened, and I quit taking lessons. So, but I kept going with my music.
And as I recall, when we were talking before, I mean, I believe you stayed in the L.A. area until you were about 20 or so.
I was in and out of the L.A. area. I went to L.A. when I was like 20. My mom had died, and I was kind of up in the air about where I was going. And a friend of mine, him and I moved to L.A. and I started playing music there, and I got into bands and had my own bands and.
So maybe we could talk about that a little bit. So were you in, like, different bands or one band that would kind of transform into another band? And what were some of their names? And then you started playing in clubs. And so tell me a little bit. Do you remember the name of your first band? Or
yeah, I went by my first and middle name, John Richard. It was a John Richard band. and then they changed. I'd get different musicians, and I was always, you know, the head of the band. So I'd get a... good musicians to back me in different places. I'd get the jobs. I'd hire them. And one band was called Atlantis Rising. And I had, kind of got some jokes out of that. But, and Moon Ridge mm-hmm. Boys, when I was playing in Big Bear Lake, California, I was up there. And I probably had, most of them were John Richard Band mm-hmm. because it was just easier.
and I didn't know that until we started talking, that you were the leader of the band, you were the lead singer of the band, your vocals were what you focused on.
Exactly.
And then you play, would you say you play rhythm guitar? Or, I mean, you're the lead singer. I mean, and I think you had mentioned that you think that your singing is much better than your guitar playing, but I mean, they go together very, very nicely, and that might not be fair to say.
Yeah, you could say I was the main rhythm player because I knew all the songs and I had to know all the chords. And then these people I'd throw at the last minute and would have to come follow me, so I had to know the song. And they just kind of followed if they knew the song or whether they didn't. We got paid for rehearsal a lot.
And see, and when you took your first class from me, you know, I didn't know you were a musician. I mean, and I didn't know that you were really in the music scene in L.A. So you were really in the music scene. You had bands, you went to clubs, you wrote music, you did bookings.
Yeah, I never got really deep into it because the politics of the music industry and what the opportunities that kids have nowadays with like Star Search or... I don't even know. I'm dating myself here. American Idol or America's Got Talent. I mean, there were so many opportunities now that we didn't have. And so it was really hard to break into the industry. And you had to know a lot of people. And you had to be right on your game because you had to have a following. You had to play in clubs for free just to get that following. And so it was really hard. I just kind of like bounced from jobs. And then I'd be playing music. And then I'd go to a job. And my friend said, you know what you call a musician without a girlfriend? Homeless.
Oh.
Back then, you didn't make any money playing unless you were famous. Let's put it that way.
Well, and the story gets kind of sad to me, but maybe it wasn't for you. I mean, that you did have a girlfriend. That's not the sad part.
Yeah.
And that she became your manager, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it wasn't a good thing. I don't know. And then you wrote tons of songs. But for whatever reason, she went to Mexico and you went north, and all of your songs and albums and all your musical information was left in storage, and then it was gone. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's totally correct. I call it escaping L.A. that place is so crazy. I just had to get out of there, and I did, and I was glad I did. But I kind of lost track with my music, but I still kept it up a little bit. I still played in a few clubs, and... when I moved to Washington, just prior to coming back here to Reading, I was in a band, and we played, and it was that was the last time I really got into this playing, and now I'm doing this with you.
I see, and I'm glad. So, do you have any regret though about just leaving all of your music? I mean, for a poet, like I probably have 200-300 pages of poems, and if that were just to disappear, I wouldn't be able to recreate that. But on one hand, I suppose that's good because then I would have to be writing new stuff. But do you ever think back and wish you had those songs at your fingertips, or is just that was just another phase of your life that you left?
No, I wish I had it, but it's not like the end of the world because I can still create mm-hmm. and I can still do things if I want. So some of the songs that I wrote and I lost, I mean, there's probably 200 of them or more.
Oh, wow.
That, and there were some of them were done in studios and I left all that. And there's no way of getting that back to its exactness. I mean, I can create something similar and...
And I know that you have 4 or 5 or 6 songs that you're going to be playing for us today. I did also want to ask you a question. Then we're going to hear your first song that you're going to play for us. When you moved to Reading, as I understand it, you had thought about attending Shasta College and learning more about the music studio business. Is that what you were saying? But then you found out that they used to have some sort of studio there in performing arts, but they don't have that for music. Is that what you're saying?
So, yeah, that's what my counselor told me. He told me that if I wanted to pursue a recording or anything like that or anything into music that of that way, because I wanted to go into recording, he said I'd have to go to Chico, and I didn't want to go to Chico.
So you're studying computers so that at some point that possibly you can, I mean, there are, see, this is another thing you were saying when starting out in the business, there are so many more opportunities today to get your material out. But also, I mean, aren't there computer programs that once a person can learn those really well that you can like play music, edit music, record music right there in your bedroom or your front room? Or
and they can sound really professional, too, because of the way they got it set up with all the different software and things you can use. It's amazing. I mean, you don't even have to know how to play a guitar or a piano or any kind of musical instrument now. It's all there for you if you know what you're doing. You know?
So the first, and before, I would like to take another minute or two before we hear the first song that you're going to play. Would you say that you have a basic theme that runs through your music, or it covers different themes or a basic style? Obviously, you're not heavy metal.
Obviously.
Were you rock and roll at one point, or country, or acoustic?
I've done cover bands where I played other people's stuff, and I did Bachman Turner Overdrive or the lighter weight rock top 40 stars stuff like that. But basically, I was, as my roots are in music, is like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Janis Joplin, The Doors, Bob Dylan. Love Bob Dylan. My favorite's Neil Young, but there's all kinds of influences in my music.
What is one, I think I had written some of this down in terms of being inspired by Bob Dylan. Did you say The Grateful Dead as well or not?
I was inspired in a different way by The Grateful Dead.
Okay. And speaking of that, I think that I have to say this part where you were saying that in the 60s, you participated fully in the 60s. In terms of smoking a little and just participating in the hippie movement a little, or no? Is that not true?
What are you trying to get me to cop to here?
we're going to take notes. No, I was thinking about the Grateful Dead, you know, and that I flashed.
I just saw a thing about the CIA, you know.
So you're not
McGovern, though.
Okay, well then we won't pursue that any further.
But I would like to say something about that. I mean, back in the 60s, there was an array of different cultures going on, and it was and drugs were obviously, and psychedelics were obviously a part of that. And I mean, I have some not paranoid, but ideas on why those drugs were around, but I don't want to really go into that because it's in depth. They were there, and that's why that saying is, I survived the 60s, you know, is around. So,
You ended up going to a military high school? Is that something that your mother put you in from maybe getting...
Yeah, trying to get my they want me to get my high school diploma and
stop fooling around, or no, I'm just kidding.
It was either that or military, and
okay.
And I am a pacifist, Doug.
For the record, John is a pacifist. And so I want to remind our audience that you are listening to Late Night Poetry Jam on KKRN. I'm Pamela Spoda, your host, and I'm talking with John Heiser, musician, songwriter, student, philosopher, and other things. So we would like to hear, for sure, your first song that you're going to do for us called The Worm. And do you want to just play it and then we'll talk about it afterwards? Or do you want to say anything? Do you want to introduce it in any way for us?
We could do both, because it's a story about, I was in Oregon, and I was getting married. The only time I ever got married, I was probably about 43. And this friend of mine, I was sitting in this bar and I was having a beer. And a friend of mine came in and we called him Bob on beer.
Bob on beer.
Because he was always on beer. Anyway, so he came in with his paper bag and inside of it was a bottle of mezcal. And he wanted me to go drink with him because I was getting married the next day. And I said, nah, you know, I'm going to pass on that. Well, this story came about from a story that his friend that went with him, their experience of that night.
But you made the right decision, right? You didn't. except you got married. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, because that could have been easily my story. Yeah, except for the marriage part. I'm no longer married, folks.
Oh, okay. Anyway. Okay.
Whoop, wrong song. So I went down to the bar, had a premonition, so I didn't drive my car. Minding my own business, when in walked Bob on beer. He was carrying a paper sack, you know I could see him in a mirror. Liquid gold, he called it, Miss Cali reassured. That's when you rest of the night I'd be talking to the world. We left and went to Boss Pad to try to ease some pain. Soaking wet when we got there from the sideways organ rain. When I jumped on for Wiggly and it said a few chores worth, I couldn't believe I was sitting there just talking to the world. Thought I was in heaven, but there's a lesson to be learned. When you stay up late to see the dawn while talking to the world. Yeah. Trying to find a front door key. Woke up in the morning in a hurry, bush next to a tree. Opened up one eye, looked around but couldn't see. Thought I was in heaven, but somewhere I got burned. Looked like that night I was doing some talking to the world. Uncle Wiggly.
Oh, John, I really like that. I really, really like that. Talking to the worm, huh?
Yeah, and he was. That could have been me. God is good.
Oh, so a song like that, I mean, so they told you the story of what happened, and then from that you thought that would make an interesting song, or that we've had experiences where we've had too much to drink, and what did you say, end up woke up next to the tree and think you're in heaven and
found out you got burns.
Talking to the worm. So in tequila.
Yeah, it's mezcal, you know, the worm on the bottom of the bottle.
Yeah. Why did they do that? Why do they put worms? I mean, is it supposed to give it flavor, or is that just part of the, never mind, the process?
It's supposed to have some kind of, if you eat it, it's supposed to have some kind of a psychedelic effect on you. But
really? Did you ever eat the worm?
No.
Okay.
Not technically.
So then that was the night before you, that song was about the night before you got married that your other two friends participated in, but you were smart enough not to indulge in that. So how long were you married?
1 year.
I see.
I was with her for about 2 years prior to that, but after we got married, just kind of didn't work out the way it was supposed to, and we ended up going to Washington, and actually, it's kind of a funny story. She ran away to the carnival.
That's a funny story.
She got a job at the carnival with her daughter, and she told me that she wanted to go on tour with the carnival, and I said, you think that's a really good idea, because I'm living with her parents at this time, because we moved there with no money, and she said, yeah, I really want to go, and I kind of was against it, but that morning when the trucks were leaving, I said, okay, I'll give you a ride down to the truck. So we caught the trucks leaving from their last place on the road. She jumped out and boogied. I never heard from her again for about 6 months.
Were you married?
Yeah.
Oh, she wanted to join the carnival after you got married?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, she fell in love with the guy that was running the place. I found out later, but I didn't know that at the time. See, I'm a trusting guy. That was my one only time I've married, and I don't think I'll get married again.
See, I was going to ask you about that. So that's a great story. That would make a great song, too. So you're married. She wants to join the carnival. You even drive her down to where the carnival, the caravan is there, and she leaps out. She jumps into the carnival caravan and goes off with the some guy in the
Well,
carnival.
It wasn't that obvious then, but yeah.
Long story
short. The end
short.
Of the story, the end of the song.
And so then when did you decide that you needed to get a divorce? When she didn't come back, or did she come back?
Oh, we're still married.
Oh, I didn't know that. you are.
Yeah, but we're separated spiritually, you know, however you want to call it. Just legally, we're still married. As far as I know, unless you got married and I don't know about it.
Well, that's a very interesting thing. I mean, not that I want to pursue this, but, you know, I was married, officially married once, and boy, when I wanted a divorce, I wanted it to be cut, ended. I didn't want to be responsible for anything. So that doesn't bother you. I mean, that you're just kind of like drifted. She's in the carnival, you're here, and you're still married.
Don't give her any ideas.
Oh, okay. She won't be listening to this show. Well, we don't know. Okay.
Moving on.
Well, okay, maybe we should move on. And I think the second song that you said that you would like to do is Millennium. And I believe you said that this took years to write this song, a Millennium.
It took longer than my normal songs, yeah. I worked on it, and I kind of put it aside, and then worked on it, put it aside, and then finally it just kind of came together. And I don't think I'm still finished with it.
You know, I'm just thinking about the worm and the feel of that, and I can just involuntarily, my legs start going, I start tapping. I mean, that would be a really fun dance tune. So some of the songs that you do would be, I mean, they'd be really danceable and from, you know, when you were playing in the clubs.
That's my influence from there, yeah.
And so is Millennium in that genre of being danceable, or is it more? Tell us a little bit about Millennium.
Millennium's more of a spiritual song. It's more of a reckoning and a turnaround, a circle of spiritual experiences. And it just kind of is a basic, I don't know, concept of life.
mm-hmm.
Not in detail, just in leaving the mystery in there.
So, well then, let's hear it, John.
Yeah.
Thank you. thought I'd ever be around these parts again. Tell by looking at you doing the same thing as me, crying a lot, wearing your heart on your sleeve. I can feel it in the wind, girl. There's a good thing coming. You see, last night I had a dream. This beautiful angel, she came to me. I asked, have you come here to take me home? She said, no, I just come to sing you a song you wrote. And the heavens opened up and the band began to play.
Thank you, John. We're just enjoying ourselves here, and this is Late Night Poetry Jam, and I'm Pamela Spoto, and in the studio is John Heiser, as well as Doug Bennett. So that's a really nice song, and
thank you.
You're welcome. And there's also transformation involved in this. I mean that's the sense that I get, that you know, it's the old to the new, down on your luck to being, you know, all smiles and kind of yeah. up on your luck. And
kind of bipolar thing.
The bipolar song.
Yeah, that's true. It does fall. I mean, everybody falls into a depths and then they bring themselves up and everything. Mm-hmm. I always believe everything works out for the best. Mm-hmm. It don't matter how bad it gets. In fact, the worse it gets, the better it gets to me. So I've seen in my life. And so things that seem really bad all of a sudden have really good consequences at the end.
I'm thinking, I hope so.
Well, it takes a little time for it all to play out, you know, in God's time.
I think I was flashing on multi levels here, you know, in terms of the world and politics and war and personal life, you know, when things get really bad. And Mother Earth is, I don't know what's happening to poor Mother Earth, but hopefully something really wonderful and transforming will come about. So that's a good song. And I also like, so the angel comes in and the angel starts singing a song. I mean, I like that.
Yeah, I did.
And maybe we could talk just a little bit about some of the different themes that you have in your in your music, because I was thinking, and of course I think about the themes that I have in poetry, and I'm kind of doing a comparison here that I think for me I have like three broad categories, like in love, my love poems, and they're a whole different nature to my love poems, and then I have environmental poems, and then I have probably political poems. So those three broad categories, and so for you. I mean, what do you have in any particular themes that run through, do you think? I mean, love and loss of love, or drinking songs, or fun songs, or transformative songs, or
I just write whatever feels good at the time. I write if I have an experience, and I'll try to put that to song, or I'll write it down. I'll think of a line, and I'll work around that one line gist of what I want to write, and then I'll make a song out of that. I don't know. I've always been really pretty political and spiritual at the same time. I don't know if that's possible, but I guess it is, you know, depending where you're from and or who you work for.
And one of the reasons I had wanted to have you on Late Night Poetry Jam is I think it was it last semester when, and I hadn't heard you sing, and you were doing a presentation on a research paper, I believe, and you had put together these wonderful PowerPoint slides and photos, and then behind that was a song. And I didn't know at first that was you, right? That was you singing and your music. And so in that sense, I thought that was a really interesting political kind of commentary. And I remember the class being just kind of going, whoa, well, that's interesting. Because that was a very creative approach to take the politics and the slides and then start putting some music and lyrics behind that. So that I was impressed.
Well, thank you.
And you got an A.
And yes, I did. Well, I appreciate that. And that was a political song, and it was the whole thing is about our government and Congress and the corporations that are doing different things that nobody likes. That we seem powerless sometimes, we need to get out and vote and change things, because they're not going to change themselves. And I know a lot of people think that voting doesn't matter because they've been down before in their past. Mm-hmm. I say it matters, and it does. It just lets them know, just like protests.
Well, and also you had just mentioned that sometimes you get an idea or you get a sentence or a line that you really like that you come back to. And I think that at times in my life, I will write a journal. I will be doing a lot of journaling. And every morning in that hypnagogic state, in that twilight space, you know, I would write. Or at night in that space, I would write. And I remember this, the author, I think it was of The Artist's Way, said that, you know, you might find one kernel within pages and pages and pages of journaling, but that one kernel can just be, you know, the kernel of gold that line comes out from. Because sometimes I think people think you just sit down and it just comes out, it just flows, it comes out the poem, it comes out the song. For me, often it takes working with the idea and thinking about it and reworking it and coming up with more. Seldom does it come out in all one piece, except my this one poem that I made, the very latest poem that I wrote, I brought with me today. At the very end of this, I might share that. And it came
That'd be nice.
Yes, during your show, featuring you, I'm going to read my poem. But
I've always shared the spotlight. I have no problem with that.
In fact, I have two poems, but... But it.
Oh, wait a minute. You have two now?
I know. Yes, from one to two. Well, I have a country western poem that I thought that I wrote a long time ago, and I thought we could play with. It could be, as I was saying, it could be a bad experiment, but we could experiment putting it to music here. Right live, Doug, right on the air. See, I'm taking a risk. And the other one is just this latest poem I've written. Just in the sense, this is one of the few poems that have come out whole. It's just like, this was on my mind, and it came out on the page. I didn't have to go back, and maybe I should, though, go back and tend to it. So, well, let's hear another song. And I think the third one that you're going to sing is called Lonesome Cowboy Blues. And is there anything that you want to say about this particular song?
I think we ought to do a...
Oh.
Look Who's Flying the Plane, since we built
up
to that.
Oh, you want to do Look Who's Flying the Plane. And we do have one of your songs on CD that you did in a studio or with a group that we'll play a little bit later. Okay.
Which had a lot to do with my marriage. So.
which? The one on the CD?
They'll figure it out.
The Double on Double? The drinking song? Drinking to the
lost
woman to the carnival? I mean, I don't know. So do you want to say anything? This is Look Who's Flying the Plane is for the project that you did for our class,
right?
that you sang behind these photos of kind
congressmen
of
devastation
and
planes crashing and stuff.
Okay, all right, I'm ready, okay. Man.
And I've changed a little bit for my. Let's see.
Okay. I still like it. I liked it when I heard it in class, and I like it even more now.
Thank you.
And that's such a
it's
great.
Pretty direct.
It is very direct, and especially, I mean, the first part of it. Why do we give power? I don't exactly sure of the exact words, but it said, "Why do we give power to the completely insane?" I mean, it certainly would appear.
Why do we give all the power to to the completely insane.
Why do we give all the power, not even just a little bit, but all the power to the completely insane? And then you show examples of that. I mean, in terms of tearing up the mountains, polluting the sky, polluting the water. I mean, the trees are dying. climate change. All of these things are happening, and they're not listening. And you're saying, you know, look at who's flying the plane. But in the end, you have Congress flying the plane, and Congress crashing the plane. Did you say crash?
They hold the money strings for the United States. I'm talking in regards to the United States, which affects the whole world.
They hold
the money, and if they're not going to be working, why are we paying them and all that good stuff that everybody wonders why they're getting paid still, and they go on vacation, then they bitch at Obama for golfing one day or 2 days. I mean, my God, come on, you people.
Well, you know, and I think that is...
vote.
Yes, tremendously interesting, especially, you know, one thing that it's the hypocritical, see, I'm going to go off on a little tangent here, this hypocritical nature of Congress, for example, right now that, and I think, and I don't know whether everybody makes this much money per day, but some of these congressmen make up to $1,500 a day, and they don't even want to extend unemployment benefits to out-of-work people. They don't even want to vote for raising the minimum wage. And are they so out of touch? I mean, they're flying, crashing the plane. They're making big bucks. But what about the rest of us? What about the rest of the 99%?
Well, our own Congressman Malfa, for instance, he voted against the food stamps, but at the same time, he gets a subsidy for his rice farms. I mean, it's so hypocritical, and it's blatant. And I don't know how they get away with it. There's no checks or balances, and it drives me crazy.
And it's called corporate welfare. And it's very, very interesting that a lot of people don't see that, the corporate welfare. So that is a very interesting song, and I like it. I like it. I like it very much. And the idea of the twisted truth, you know, the twisted truth, twisted to fit whatever view that the powers that be, would like the public to have. So
We could go on and on about it.
Yes, we could.
We just need to wake up.
And let me remind the audience. See, I'm you're snoring. You're going to sleep. No, I'm just kidding. I am in the studio with John Heiser, songwriter, lyricist, student, philosopher, life story writer, autobiographer. And I'm Pamela Spoto, the host, and we have our wonderful engineer here and producer, Doug Bennett. So now we have a choice here of going one of two ways, that we could have you play Lonesome Cowboy, or we could play the CD that you brought in, Double on Double. Did you want to save that for your last one, or do you want to do the CD now?
I could play Lonesome Cowboy Blues now and do the CD last. That would probably be a good thing. Because it's the only song I have here today that's produced.
That gives
you an idea of what it sounds like with the band. You
know? Officially produced. Okay. And so do you want to say anything about Lonesome? Or, the audience can't see, but John's chair is moving up and down. And
he's attacking me.
He's trying to hold on to the guitar and talking to the mic. So anything you want to say about Lonesome Cowboy Blues?
Just that it was my first attempt at a country western song.
Oh, good. Maybe
you want to call it that.
Maybe I should do my country western poem after we do your first attempt at. Okay, so go ahead.
Segue.
It's the segue. Okay.
I know radio terms. Except I don't remember how it starts. Okay, here we go.
I got the love.
That's nice. That's real nice. So that was your first attempt at country western. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because when you were playing that, I was just thinking what a good beat it has and how danceable it is. And and one of your lines is about
shuffle.
Is about what women having women in every town. And so is that a myth or is that the truth that when you're playing music and people are in clubs and they're watching you and the women are there and they're throwing themselves at you? Did that happen?
Yeah, I can say that safely now. I'm not married anymore. Never cheated on my wife.
No, I wasn't inferring. I was not inferring.
But yeah.
Maybe you should have. She went and joined the carnival. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
What do you say? Chicks dig musicians.
I think that's really true. Well, okay. So why don't we use that as a segue? I mean, is that possible? So you have one more song for us that you're going to be playing. And we're going to talk a little bit more. But this is a poem that I wrote a really long time ago, and I call it my only country western poem. And I love putting poetry to music, but I don't just normally just sit down and say, okay, let's do it. And so we're going to do this on the air, and we could be this could be a very bad experiment. Or it could be very good. What do you think?
Could be a good one.
Okay. So this is just kind of, I'm just going to talk this poem. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. So here I go. I've been loving the wrong right man. I'm leaving with the same passion I came with. I'm leaving because I ain't no fool. Just dumbstruck, dazzled, in love. I'm leaving your hot hazel eyes, your mouth wet from kissing me in my fantasy. There we have it. And see, you never know. I mean, when music is happening, I had no idea how what kind of chords or what kind of sound or that you were going to produce. It's interesting. Did you kind of like how that?
I chose kind of a blues thing because, I don't know. Because blues crosses over country I didn't know what you were going to do, so it actually came out fairly well.
Yes, it did, and very different from, I have this other little short poem, but I know that this was a fascinating thing to me. Maybe we could just talk a little bit more about this, and then we'll play your CD. You had mentioned that as you were growing up, maybe it wasn't all the time you were growing up, but in your teens, beginning in your teens, that your friends called you the preacher and the teacher?
Jesus, actually.
And Jesus.
Yeah, that's because when we all lived together in houses as you're growing up, you kind of get together with different people, and you're all roommates, and you have this house, Jehovah's Witnesses would come around and everybody would like hide and I'd invite them in and we'd have Bible discussions. And I'd love to ask them questions because I was wondering, you know, because I've always been inquisitive, what's your philosophy, you know, mm-hmm. I got mine mm-hmm. and whatever. And I was brought up Catholic, so I'm a recovering Catholic, I guess, you know. Sorry, Pope, but because I actually do like the new Pope. He's good.
You know, I like the new Pope too. And he said, I think one of the latest things that he said many things, but that one of the sins should be what environmental destruction, you know, what we're doing to the environment is a sin. And I said, yes. So good for the Pope.
Yeah, I think the preacher thing came more from just me expounding my philosophies to people. You know, just mm-hmm. like, oh, mm-hmm. we, you know, this is the way it is. That's the way it is. And they're all looking at me like, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that maybe we should play the CD, and then that would be the last song that we will be doing here. So Mr. Doug, can you play the CD for us, or?
I can. You want to do a little intro to it, and then I'll just start it whenever you tell me.
Okay. So this is called Double on Double.
Double on the Double.
On the Double. I'm sorry. Double on the Double.
Double on the Double.
Okay. So.
It's not Double on the Double, it's Double on the Double.
Okay. And so, so what about it? I mean, what inspired you or your wife? Is that what you said? No.
I would like to give her that credit, but I'm not going to. And it's just pretty self-explanatory. It's about losing love and trying to figure it out and maybe going the wrong way.
Okay, okay.
Give me a double on a double. My memories give me trouble again. Give me a double on a double. Double on a double, please. But now I know it's not the answer. I know it's not a cure.
So that was
Double on the Double.
Double on the Double, Love Gone Bad, and drinking away the bad.
Yeah, knowing all the time you're not supposed to be doing it, but you're doing it anyway because you can't figure it out. Yeah, one of those things.
So what musicians did you, how did you get musicians for this particular song? People that you knew that you were playing music with at the time?
Yeah, pretty much just acquaintances. And the guy had a studio, so he did it. It did it for me.
Well, you know, John, I've really enjoyed our show today. It went very smoothly, and I really appreciate your coming on to Late Night Poetry Jams. And for the audience, again, this is John Heiser, and I'm Pamela Spoto, poet and host of Late Night Poetry Jam. And this would not be happening without our engineer and producer, Doug Bennett. So, John, I thank you again for being here. And is there anything else that you would like to say or leave our... So I have a feeling that music is just going to become profoundly more important in your life now.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot more back into my music, and I really appreciate this opportunity to be here and sing to everybody that's listening. And thank you, Doug Bennett and Pamela Spoto, my teacher. And friend, and thank you.
Okay, and so goodbye all, and see you next time. Okay, bye.
Yay.
You've been listening to Late Night Poetry Jam with host and poet Pamela Sboto here the last Saturday of the month on KKRN 88.5 FM.